right, this is Pure Decking, show number 482 for Thursday, June the 9th, 68. The year 68. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and reminding you that it is okay to buy candy from your childhood. Fruit roll-ups are, in fact, awesome. So, we're starting out the show tonight solo. There's literally nobody else here, and I've been killing time trying to wait and see if somebody else is going to show up, and that's been a negative. I've only done one solo show before, but I was told it wasn't terrible, so here we go. I'm hoping for some late arrivals. We'll see. But in the meantime, I've got about half of a bourbon barrel ale left, and yeah, so I guess we'll, it's like, you know, is there anything worth talking about before we get into it or just getting into it? I mean, not really. I mean, the world's a fucking mess. I think I'm being haunted by a cat, but, you know, hey, other than that, I guess we'll get right into it here. Oh,
I'm here.
We have a Suave. Welcome back to Decking. It's been like a decade.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So, and I actually am serious about being haunted by a cat thing. So, anyways, what's up with you, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. Very busy day.
User joined
sitting
your
down
channel
with a drink. Oh, there
oh,
we go.
We have another late arrival. Are you? You just missed the intro. Oh, are you?
Bueller? Well, he's here with us in spirit anyways.
Yeah. Doesn't have his mic working. Windows is helping. That or he just hasn't recovered his voice yet after being in the COVID camp all week. At least I'm assuming that's what happened to him. So, anyways, I guess while RU sorts out whatever's going on with his mic, he needs to fix his settings, so we might hear him bounce in and out while we go.
User left your channel.
So let's see here. Oops, don't click the link. I hate the way TechCrunch does their site. If you touch anything, it goes to their homepage. Okay, so I guess we'll get into the discussion story here. It's a little strange. I'm not 100% how I feel on this, but I thought it'd be good to talk about. So India is considering an appeals panel with power to reverse Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube content moderation decisions. India is proposing to create an appeals panel with veto power to reverse content moderation decisions of social media firms, it said Monday evening, republishing the draft changes to the IT rules after quietly withdrawing it last week. If enacted, it would be the first time globally that a nation creates an appeals panel of this kind. New Delhi, which is currently seeking public comments on the proposal with a 30-day deadline, said that the new amendment, quote, will not impact early stage or growth stage Indian companies or startups, unquote, in a relief for local giants such as Daily Hunt, ShareChat, and Co. So it's, K-O-O. I'm not sure how you would say that. India is the largest market of YouTube and Facebook by user count and a key overseas region for Twitter. So they're only targeting the offshore, the big American social media companies here. But yeah, according to the current law, content moderations by social media giants Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter can only be appealed to a court. India's Ministry of IT and Electronics said in a statement that the proposed, quote, new accountability standards, unquote, are aimed at ensuring the, quote, constitutional rights of Indian citizens are not contravened by any big tech platform, unquote. Quote, a number of intermediaries have acted in violation of constitutional rights of Indian citizens, unquote, the ministry added. The proposed amendments to the IT rules follow a remarkable few years for U.S. tech giants that have already been pushed to point and share contact details of grievance redress officers onto timely address on-ground concerns and coordinate with law enforcement officials. Quote, these rules have succeeded in creating a new sense of accountability among intermediaries to their users, especially within big tech platforms, unquote, the ministry said. Google, Twitter, Meta, and many other firms are already fully or partially comply with the IT rules, which came into effect last year. The rules also require significant social media firms to operating encrypted messaging services to devise a way to trace the originator of a message for special cases. Several firms, including Facebook's WhatsApp and Signal, have not complied with the requirement. WhatsApp last year sued the Indian government over the requirement. I think we talked about that. It sounds familiar. It sounds like something I would have put on decking. Twitter faced backlash from the government last year over its decision not to block some accounts and tweets that New Delhi deemed objectionable. The heat followed the company's top executive vacating the position to pursue a different role within the firm. New Delhi-based digital rights advocacy group Internet Freedom Foundation, which has expressed grave concerns about the IT rules, calling them anti-democratic and unconstitutional, said in a statement that the proposed changes, quote, only perpetuates the already existing illegalities, unquote. So, yeah, this is pretty out there. Go ahead.
Well, I find it interesting that they're only targeting YouTube, Facebook, and Meta, Twitter, YouTube, and Meta.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, all these Indian companies, they don't need to comply with this. Just these international companies.
Well, those Indian companies are already legally obligated to deal with the government, right? You know.
Yeah, and so would Facebook and anybody else dealing in there. It's just like you said in the story, they'd have to go through the courts.
I think I've got it.
Hey, we have an RU.
There we go.
So, you missed the intro and the opening discussion story. India is building an appeals panel with veto power to reverse content moderation decisions of Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.
Okay.
And I'm guessing it's one of these things where it's like, we're passing a law, and if you're going to do business in India, you'll comply with the decisions of this board, right? But I'm not sure how this is going to work because, I mean, India's government doesn't exactly have the greatest reputation when it comes to, you know, corruption.
I think you're starting to see a lot of nations stand up to Facebook, Twitter, and things like that, telling them, not here. Go away.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. But this idea that we're going to make a council and the decisions of our council on your content moderation, you know, I think that's a little weird. I'm sure if they could just nationalize these things, they would, but that, yeah, right. I'm not sure who could pull that off these days.
You know, like this article kind of leaves a lot of blank spots.
Yeah,
they're
it really
like,
does.
Oh yeah, a number of intermediaries have acted in violation of constitutional rights of Indian citizens. How? What did they do? And like, I just, you know, they're saying, yeah, they're infringing on the constitutional rights. What are they infringing on? And why is this only applicable to Facebook and stuff? And, you know, like,
yeah,
that's
a good question. Why are they exempting the Indian companies?
And, you know, like, before it could be handled by the courts, yeah, it could only be appealed to a court. So they're basically creating a different court to do the same thing? Like, that's kind of what it looks like to me.
Well, I'm wondering if because they're creating it outside the court system, if it won't be subject to the same you know, rules and procedures and requirements, you know, they'll say, oh, it's so we can do it faster. But I mean,
also easier to abuse.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing though, is they're saying content moderation decisions with an appeals, you know, an appeals panel. And, you know, that kind of sounds like, well, if you're taking something down, but really content moderation decisions also include leaving things up. So if I go on YouTube and file a complaint on a video and they decide not to take it down, that's a content moderation decision. That's just one where they disagreed with me, you know, if I was to be the one complaining in this example.
Yeah.
Or the one running the bot network of issuing complaints or whatever the method that people do that is these days. I guess there's one where they file a series of not copyright complaints. What was it? Oh, hacking complaints, claiming your video showing people how to hack or violating a law, and just like you know, spam the snot out of it, and that apparently will get them taken down really quickly. Is one of the current scams. So I'm confused about the legal authority to do this. I'm assuming it's just a mandate they're trying to enforce, but I'm not certain I like the idea of the government getting involved in content moderation.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like the government isn't already involved. Like, there's plenty of things that are illegal to post. With good reason.
Hmm.
It's just, you know, it's the fuzzy area at the edge cases where things start getting a little bit funky. What?
Oh, and two, if this thing gets backed up and you know, is way, way behind, does it do any good? I imagine that's why they want to move it out of the courts, is because, you know, getting something through the courts is usually an exercise measured in years, right? And if you're doing something that's relatively political, is like, say, for an upcoming election, a process that takes years to appeal a content moderation decision is probably not going to be terribly useful. But, you know, at the same time, there's no kind way to say it. Is it another grift? Is it just a way to extract bribes from people?
50-50, man.
Yeah.
You know?
I do find it interesting that the Internet Freedom Foundation are calling these rules anti-democratic and unconstitutional. And it says it only perpetuates the already existing illegalities.
Well,
again, it's so vague. Like, what existing illegalities? No?
This is why I'm not a fan of using TechCrunch as a source, but theirs was the you know one of a handful of articles that was actually worth looking at. And, you know, they've got a link to a New Delhi or the actual Indian government page that has the rules, and the damn thing wouldn't load last time I tried, so...
Welcome to India, Internet.
Yeah, really. Have you tried turning it on and off again?
Oh, and so I'm just kind of scanning through the Internet Freedom site and whether they're talking about this. One of the requirements is that these companies are going to have to notify you at least once a year. So you're basically going to be getting these periodic emails reminding you not to do anything illegal.
Well, you know, I joke about that, but I mean, you guys know I've been looking at the amateur radio stuff, and apparently right after January 6th, the FCC issued a big statement about not, you know, using, that you're not allowed to use radios to perpetuate, you know, illegal activities or something like that. It's like, no shit, it's already illegal. What do you mean you're not allowed to use radios to plan illegal activity if you're already doing something but you know it's like yeah of course they got to issue a bulletin saying don't do bad things. I mean, really? It's like, come on.
I would like to know, and this is going off topic, how many people that went to the January 6th thing but did not take a mobile phone were picked up by the FBI?
I would imagine that number is relatively low.
I'm just wondering, you know,
I mean, if they weren't in the building when they grabbed them.
I mean, they grab most of these people. They grab most of them due to their phones.
And
they did get a lot of people from, like, getting turned in by friends and family because they were bragging about stuff. A lot of people got caught just because there were photos of them.
Yeah, if you had...
They were trying to identify people for a while.
If you were wearing something easily identifiable, say a large pair of horns and a shaman outfit.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, they're going to expand data retention requirements. I have to preserve information for 180 days.
Are you, remember when we were talking a few years back about possibly building out our own social media site and you said, don't do it? Thank you for that. Because
welcome,
I don't want to have to deal with this bullshit. And if I had built something like that.
That'd be a nightmare.
I mean, my day job's bad enough when it comes to bullshit like this.
Man, you don't want to be compliant in your hobbies, man.
Really? So, anyway, so how was the COVID camp, are you?
Oh, it was fantastic. Went fishing and had to wear my mandatory life jacket and wetsuit, my rebreather and tank just in case I did start drowning.
Jeez. Well, sounds like you had
fun. It was a stick of bad ram, dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's all it was.
Oh, well.
Easy fix.
Yeah, I got it on insurance, man. It was still
in. Fix.
Yeah, it was still under warranty.
Nice.
But
well,
it didn't cost me a fucking cent.
You were talking up that shop you got your machine from, so.
Yeah, man, that's why I said I don't work on computers anymore. You know, $90 gets me 2 years warranty. The minute they open that case, they have to put a 2 year warranty on everything. All right.
I don't know. I kind of enjoy putting them together, but at the same time, my last rig was a laptop, and, you know, there's no building that. Well, I opened it up, stuck a bigger drive in it, but.
Yeah, so you enjoy it. I don't. I've tried it. It's not my thing. I'm not interested in learning it. And
fair enough.
Yeah, I'll pay someone else to do my dirty work for me.
Well, again, it's like this radio stuff. Like, I'm really enjoying coming at it because I don't know much about it right now, so I'm actually being forced to learn stuff. And even more, Suave and I were talking about this earlier, about how, you know, at first I was kind of annoyed about the rules where I live about throwing up an antenna, but it means I can't just solve the not knowing how to do it problem with money. I can't just go buy a tower, throw it up, and solve the problem, right? I have to actually understand the theory and figure out how to build a fucking stealth antenna, which is kind of fun. So, you know, it's giving me a problem to solve and forcing me to learn. So, hey, that's nice.
Well, considering I scrambled to get in here, I've left my drink outside. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Feel free to get it. I'm going to read the next story. Let's see. This one is from Android Police. And it's good to remember even these quote-unquote no-log services. Yeah. Telegram reportedly surrendered user data to authorities despite insisting 0 bytes has ever been shared. Messaging apps that offer end-to-end encryption can claim they're protecting their users by saying they've thrown away the key, metaphorically and literal, and can't undo what's been scrambled in transmission. Telegram, however, claims it protects every user, whether they use end-to-end encryption or not, saying that the government data requests have to pass an especially high muster before they would comply, and that they have never acceded to such a request. But not so, a report claims. Der Spiegel reports from sources that Telegram has fulfilled a number of data requests from Germany's Federal Criminal Police Office involving terror and child abuse suspects. Still more data requests for other criminal cases have been more or less ignored. So they do have stuff they're looking at. And, of course, I mean, that's Telegram's statement, especially high bar, right? So child abuse, terror. As for the privacy claims, at the same time, I don't know that I'm against them assisting with that, especially the child abuse stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
So.
But, I mean, if they have the ability to give user information about that sort of stuff, well, then they have the ability to give that information about other stuff.
And that's the rub. So, to date, Telegram has maintained in the FAQ section of its website that it has transferred 0 bytes of user data to any third party, including governments. In Section 8.3 of its privacy policy, last updated in 2018, the company says it will release users' IP addresses and phone numbers to authorities when presented with a warrant on terrorism-related charges. However, despite promising to release semi-annual reports on any disclosure activities, it has never actually done so. The German government has been pressuring Dubai-based Telegram to cooperate with its investigations into right-wing extremist groups who have been using the messaging platform to spread their cause and coordinate action. Telegram has ramped up its own enforcement actions recently, but its user and group bans have been as comprehensive as lawmakers have, or have not been as comprehensive as lawmakers have been looking for. In a similar vein, Russia purged the company's app in 2018 from the country for refusing to surrender its encryption keys under federal anti-terrorism laws. Telegram reached an agreement with the Kremlin in 2020 that would see the app return to Russia with increased enforcement across the platform. It's a good sign that Telegram continues to provide Russian users with an uncensored window into the military's invasion of Ukraine, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they've reached out to Telegram for comment and have not received it. So, and again, it makes sense that Telegram might, you know, might have, I guess, what you would call the metadata, right? IP addresses, phone numbers, you know, when an account was logged into or not, without actually having the content of the message or probably even who it's to. Well, I guess they could get who it's to because they have to route it. So, yeah. I guess in this case, it's what does Telegram define as user data, which means you'd have to get a hold of their policy documents to get that. And it's always interesting how companies classify some of their data because...
Yeah, I mean, I would consider one's IP address as user data, but apparently not Telegram.
Well, I'll tell you... some of the companies I've worked at, what they consider, you know, the way they classify their data is quite interesting because some things that I think should be classified much higher on the scale aren't. And it's not because anybody disagrees with the reasoning. It's because of the way the regulations are. If they classify the data that way, they can't make money because they can't use the applications that are, you know, don't quite fit all the requirements for data classifications at those levels. So... it's one of those, you know, compromise things where it's like, well, if we classify this lower, we can still claim we're not sharing user data because that's not user data. That's metadata. That's, you know, I mean, to me, that's playing games, but I'm fairly certain that's what's really going on here.
Yeah. And, you know, I did not know that Telegram was based out of Dubai.
Yeah. Didn't you know that?
I mean... I feel like the United Arab Emirates' track record on
it's not great.
like privacy and civil rights and all that sort of stuff are it's not awesome.
But man, you can say a lot of shit about shit you can't say in the Western world, though.
Yeah, but you can also you're not allowed to say a lot of shit that you're allowed to say in the Western world. So you know.
I don't know, man. Remember, I used to use that Pulse program. A lot of jihadi terrorist shit on there and things like that.
Oh, that news thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to do that prank phone call stuff.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they are Telegram today.
Okay. Yeah, I see it was founded by a couple of Russians.
Yeah, I think Signal's got probably the best reputation of any of them right now, but...
you know, weren't they just handing over... user data?
Who, Signal?
Yeah, to the feds.
I don't think.
Or was that Telegram?
I think that, well, that's the article, is that Telegram was doing it.
Okay, I got my.
I mean, any of these companies, you know, they can usually get away with being on the down low when they're small and niche, but once they get big, I don't think they can get away with it anymore. There's too many eyes on them. Too much attention, too many interest groups.
Signal did get a grand jury subpoena in California back in October of 2021, and they said that they can give accounts of, you know, it's the same set of that we can provide. Unix timestamps for when each account was created, the date the account last connected to the service, and that's it. So, yeah, Signal's basically saying the same thing. It's like, yeah, we can give them, doesn't have your messages, your chat, profile, avatar. All they can provide is some Unix timestamps for the account and subscriber information. So, and when they were connected to the service. So, Which I imagine is probably the same thing that Telegram's turning over, by the way. Because, again, if they're doing the encryption correctly, they can't turn over message contents because they wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
Now, if they're caching keys somewhere, then that conversation goes out the window. But that means they're not doing end-to-end encryption management, well, I would say, correctly. I have a feeling, but you're right, as more and more eyes get on this, I have a feeling you're going to start seeing governments requiring these companies to find a way to give them a backdoor.
Oh, yeah, and if they don't officially do it, then they get somebody hired who can go, you know, put a little bit of code in here.
Well, that's possible, but I think the way you're going to do it, because at least if I was trying to solve that problem of I need to be able to respond to a warrant and give a government, you know, unencrypted message or, you know, the ability to decrypt messages that have been intercepted, it means you have to do some kind of a key escrow. You have to manage the keys for an account. And, you know, it's hard to do a zero trust service if you're escrowing the damn keys. So either you don't advertise you're doing it, because anybody who knows what that means would immediately not use your service. And a lot of people who don't know what it means would be very scared by it, wouldn't use your service because it sounds weird and confusing.
I would say if you're not using any of these services, don't start.
Well, that's probably.
And really, it comes down to trust, because you're having to trust that they are doing the right thing. You know, you have to trust that they're not cashing the keys and they're not cooperating with governments, and you have to trust that they're telling you the truth when they say they haven't shared any user data and all this other sort of stuff.
So I think the right approach here, and again, I'm going to relay it back to the radio because that's what I've been doing lately. Everything on the radio on the amateur bands is you're not allowed to encrypt it. It's all public. It's very public. Anybody can listen to it. And I think you have to treat all of these messaging services on your phone, anything on the phone, is basically the same. Just assume that anything you put into that thing might as well be broadcasting clear text to anyone who wants to look at it.
Yeah.
And if that's how you operate it, I think you'd be all right. Yeah. Just assume that anything you put in there might as well be public. I mean.
Well, you get a kick out of this, Morps.
All right.
One of the podcasts I listen to, they have their own chat program on something. The only way you can find out where that chat program, where they'll be gathering to chat live during the show, is if you can decode the radio message they send over using some sort. Yeah. It comes over by sound and it turns into a URL using some machine. I don't know how any of this shit works, and I don't want to know how this shit works. That's how they're getting away with having a heap of people just go somewhere, chat for an hour, and then leave.
Well, you know at one point when I was first looking at this stuff, I wouldn't have understood it, but shortwave goes a long freaking way these days. I mean, so if you've got the right kind of receiver and you know how they're encoding it, you know, it's probably not that hard to grab.
No, it's probably not that hard to grab. I just thought it was a very amusing way.
And at one point, I would have thought that was, you know, really hard to get a signal out to all of your people. But again, as I've been learning about this stuff, it's like, oh no, it's not. If you've got the right kind of setup, the kind of equipment you need is not even that expensive. So I could totally see that. And then it's just a question of the decoding. And, I mean, there's a billion ways to do that, so then you got to know what they're doing, but or at least have a clue of where to start. But, I still feel like that's the way to do it, is just, you know, treat everything as though anything you put in a fucking phone might as well be, I mean, if not public, I mean, viewable by major corporations and government authorities, so.
I'm browsing Wikipedia on these guys who made Telegram. These are also the guys who created VK, that Russian Facebook clone. VK.com.
That's interesting that they're in Dubai.
Yeah.
They're Russian. guessing they didn't get along with Air Putin there.
So. No. Their shit is hosted in Dubai. They're living somewhere else.
Oh. Well, let's...
Yeah. Well, you got a nice little chalet there in the Canary Islands.
I think it's the Virgin Islands.
Well, there you go. So what you're saying is, are you, we started the wrong, we should have been starting these kind of companies.
No, if you're going to start this sort of company, what you do is you start with extradition laws and you build it that way. You find somewhere that can't can't send you any Western country or anything like that. And that's where you host everything.
Well, you also want to make sure it's someplace where it'd be difficult to black bag your ass too. So.
Yeah, that too.
The legal domicile is in the Virgin Islands. Their operational center is in Dubai.
There I go. What did I tell you?
So
I mean, look, Kim.com thought he was safe in New Zealand.
That's true.
Yeah.
And the FBI still managed to somehow get New Zealand's permission to do a black bag job. They never, ever gave the details out on the agreements of that, which is really weird.
Well, I'm sure it involved pallets of money.
But
at the same time, you know, that's the way the FBI would do it. Now, think how the Russian intelligence services are going to do it. They're not going to bother to get permission. They're just going to go into a country and do it, especially if it's an island, you know.
Yeah.
So they'll just kidnap your butt. I mean, you know. So anyways, next article. This one's from The Guardian. It's all over the place, though. EU will force iPhones to use USB-C charger by 2024. The EU has paved the way for all smartphones to be legally required to use a USB-C port for charging, a move that could be a headache for Apple, whose iPhone is the only main brand smartphone without the type of connection. The EU's agreement will apply from autumn of 2024 for all smartphones sold in the bloc, a decision that could substantially impact Apple, as iPhone uses the Lightning port for wired charging. USB-C ports were introduced in Apple's 12-inch MacBook in 2015, iPad Pro 2018, and other iPads that come with the port since 2020. Some Apple users with devices featuring the Lightning connector praise its grip. No, nobody I know cares about the grip. So some complaining the USB-C ports lose over time. Well, I guess with cheaply made stuff, you never know. Others have expressed their desire to do away with the dongle bundles of adapters and replace them with universal cable for all Apple products. EU said that the rule change aims to reduce hassle for consumers as well as electronic waste, as it will enable consumers to use old chargers for new devices. The rules will apply to, quote, all small and medium-sized portable electronic devices, which will include mobile phones, tablets, cameras, keyboards, speakers, headphones, headsets, and earbuds. Laptops will have to be adapted to fit the requirement 40 months after they come into the force. A decision is yet to be approved by European Parliament and European Council, but it's expected to be a formality. European Parliament spokesperson Alex Saliba said, "Today we have made the common charger a reality in Europe." Quote, "European consumers were long frustrated with multiple chargers piling up with every new device. Now they will be able to use a single charger for all their portable electronics." Quote, "We are proud that laptops, e-readers, earbuds, keyboards, mice, and portable navigation devices are also included, in addition to smartphones, tablets, digital cameras, headphones, headsets, handheld video game consoles, and portable speakers." Ben Wood, chief analyst at CCS Insights, said the announcement would become a non-issue for Apple, as the firm already uses USB-C on a number of products. Quote, "Having one common charging standard would be a victory for common sense in the eyes of consumers," he said. Quote, "Although Apple has made a strong argument for keeping its Lightning connector, some of its products, including Mac and iPad Pro, now support the USB-C. Hopefully it will eventually become a non-issue if Apple keeps adding USB-C to more devices. That means ultimately we could see USB-C coming to the iPhone. And, of course, if they are required to do it, everyone will get a USB-C on the iPhone, because it wouldn't make sense to make multiple SKUs, at least for this."
Yeah.
But, the, and as, you know, the thing I worry about with this, Because absolutely, if you look at the spec for USB-C today, it's the obvious choice for a connector on a mobile device. Today. What happens 10 years from now? I mean, there's no details in here. You know, how long is this going to be in effect? Is it sunset? Does it not? You know, I mean,
these people to have long-term thinking skills, Morps?
Unfortunately, well, no. That's kind of the point.
Apparently, USB 4 will use the same connector.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be an issue in the short term anyways.
Well, I wouldn't expect it to be because, again, the USB-C port is a very flexible standard because you get USB 2 through 4 on it relatively easily, plus several different charging modes, plus other carriers like DisplayPort, HDMI, things like that. So it's a very flexible standard, so I don't think this is going to be an issue for a while. That's why I picked the 10-year number.
Right.
And it could just be the EU is expecting the innovation to happen, you know, stateside or somewhere else, and just kind of hope that by the time something better comes along, they can convince whoever's running their government at that time to adopt the new one. Versus, I mean, you know, it's like the example Madman gave us the other day of the seatbelts, where, you know, we've designed better seatbelts for years, but because the government has a standard of what the seatbelts are, and if you don't have that standard, you're at the very least liable for any accident in the car. They don't sell it.
We're going to see very similar situation like we did with just power sockets, you know, plugging something into the wall. Every country has their standards, and there's so much momentum behind that, you're never going to see it change. You know, everybody's appliances use this type of cord and this type of plug. Nobody's going to want to switch to something else and buy all new appliances or put adapters on all their walls and shit like that. You know, it's just once that gets set in place, that's going to be the standard forever. I mean, it's going to take a serious push to change it in the future.
Well, if we are going to get everyone to adopt a global standard for plugs, I say we grab the British one because they have fuses in them.
Yeah, North America, we are definitely don't have the best plugs.
No, we do not. Very flexible system of plugs. And of course, it's always great watching Electro Boom jam wires into the socket. It's just like, that should not work, but it does. it's a good comparison, and because yeah, you're right in that every area it's all enforced by code.
Yeah,
you know, because you and I were talking about it. You were talking about the idea of putting some foreign plugs around, and that you could do it, except code enforcement would have a field day with it.
Oh yeah.
So.
But I will say it certainly is superior to the connector used on the Lightning cables. You know, I've lost count of the number of posts I've seen of people complaining about the connector snapping off inside their phone. It seems a little bit too small and too flimsy.
Well, my problem with the Lightning connector is that it's USB 2.
Ah, yeah, that's an issue.
So, like, I have a fairly recent model iPhone. What is this? This is a 13, I think? I forget. But it's got the Lightning connector on it, right? So it's probably the best camera I have. And you can record 4K video and all this stuff. And if you want to get your video off there, it's either over Wi-Fi, a cellular link, or a flipping USB 2 cable. You know what I mean? It's like there's no fast way to get large files off of the phone. And yet the phone's probably got the best camera I have on it, you know?
Yeah.
So, if nothing else, the move to a standard port means that you probably get at least the USB 3 speeds. But again, this is, you know, sort of like the first story. This is government meddling, and I'm not certain that's a good thing. I mean, short term, if you know, get USB-C on the iPhone, sure, that's great. But you know, again, like Ari said, long term planning, what's that? So
yeah,
long term planning means we don't have a problem in the future. That means our job doesn't need to exist.
But, you know, one positive is that, so the EU is making this rule, so pretty much every manufacturer is going to comply with it because they want to sell stuff in the EU and they don't want to make multiple devices,
sure,
with all that added cost. But none of the other countries in the world, or continents, or whatever you are going to be bound by these standards. So if somebody does want to innovate, there's nothing stopping them, especially if they're a domestic manufacturer. You know, if somebody's just selling stuff in the States and Canada, for example, they can do whatever they want. So we get the benefit of having the standardization without the having your hands tied in regards to innovation or anything. If somebody does come up with something that works much better, odds are you'll probably see EU adopt that if it's kind of already taken over other countries.
Yeah, I could see that. So, anyways, it'll be interesting to see what comes of it. I'm just, you know, like I said, USB-C is not a bad port. Certainly it's the best we've got today. I just worry about, you know, mixing government and tech. That always seems to be a mistake.
but we have such young, sprightly, you know, politicians these days.
Well, as I understand from Australia's reporting, you know, the 90s is the prime of life. I mean,
apparently.
So this next article requires a little bit of explanation for why I'm in here, because I got a theory here. So it's from Fortune. Remote workers may soon be able to live and work tax-free in Bali under a 5-year digital nomad visa. As companies like Airbnb adopt a work-from-anywhere model, prospective digital nomads need to think about where they want to base themselves. Perhaps the sun-drenched vineyards of Tuscany, the gleaming skyscrapers of Dubai, or how about the sandy tropical beaches of Bali? Remote workers hoping to log in from the seaside villas lining the coasts of the Indonesian island may soon get their chance, as Indonesia's tourism minister, Sandiaga Uno, told Bloomberg on Monday the country is developing a new digital nomad visa to attract high-spending visitors. Quote, in the past, the three S's were sun, sea, and sand. We're moving it to serenity, spirituality, and sustainability, Uno said. Indonesia's digital nomad visa would be effective for 5 years, and Indonesia wouldn't tax income received from overseas. Uno also promised speedier visa approvals and greater frequency of flights in the interim. Bali is already popular and at times controversial destination for digital nomads thanks to its tropical climate and low cost of living, but Bali-based digital nomads operate in a legal gray area at best. Currently, visitors can either get a tourist visa for a maximum of 60 days or jump through legal loopholes for a 6-month temporary work visa permit, but anybody staying in Indonesia for longer than 183 days of a full year automatically becomes a local tax resident, meaning subjected to overseas income or subjecting overseas income to Indonesia's tax rates. Indonesia's top tax bracket is 35% tax rate at income above $350,000, and while that's a lower tax rate than countries like the U.S., and the UK, it's still more than other potential digital nomad hubs. Dubai, which offers its own 1-year renewable digital nomad visa, does not charge income tax at all, whatever the visa type. So this goes on, you know, they're talking about tourism and you know, people living there who are making money being digital nomads, you know, supporting local economy and things like that. This reads like Pleasure Island to me. Like, oh yeah, 5 years, tax free, and now we've got all your tech workers and we're keeping them. You know,
hey, if you are going to do this, just remember the locals have they don't have to like you. You're going to drive their prices up, the local markets, because of all your extra money. And I'd say by about the 6-month mark, you're going to have worn out your welcome and you start getting robbed and bashed for fucking up their local economy.
I mean, that's definitely a possibility.
No, that will be what happens. Trust me.
Yeah.
These let's just say these northern countries above me. Yeah, they don't really like tourists.
I just...
especially if you venture outside the tourist areas.
Yeah,
I wouldn't recommend it.
Well, yeah, because at that point, they just see money. All I have to do is bash your head in and take it.
Well, yeah. You've ruined their local economy by having so much fucking money. all the nicest areas the locals can no longer frequent because they can't afford it. Do you think they're going to get resentful of these people?
Well, I'm waiting to see people start getting resentful of $5 a gallon gas, but, you know, hey.
You know, you'll probably see things like you already do in very touristy areas. Like, you go down to Mexico.
They tell you not to leave the tourist areas.
Now, like, everything's super expensive. But in that, like, in the same town, like, you've got the tourist restaurants, and then you have the restaurants the locals go to. And the local restaurants are still local prices. The touristy restaurants are tourist prices. And it ends up making this multi-tier system. I don't think it's going to be like, oh, yeah, everything all across the board is now more expensive. You're just going to see these, this separation.
So you don't think this is a Dr. Evil-esque plan to try to kidnap a whole bunch of tech workers? Because that's the first thing I thought.
You know, economically, it makes sense.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's a great tax base.
Yeah, and like, so you, like, if you think about it, you basically have money that's being generated elsewhere coming into your country. And those people who are working there are spending it on the local economy. So it's bringing money in, which is great. I mean, if I were a digital nomad, I certainly wouldn't want to set up any sort of long-term plans for working in a foreign country, especially if it's just under a visa. You're not getting citizenship or anything like that. So everything is very much up in the air. They might change laws. You know, that things could happen.
I would want to have an escape route.
What? Not only would you want to have an escape route, but I wouldn't want to plan on being anywhere more than, you know, what, a couple of months at a time. If you're in someplace like in Indonesia or Dubai or someplace like that, you know,
but, you know it. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say the way I would do it if I was going to do the whole digital nomad thing is you'd still have a base of operations somewhere. You know, maybe it's staying with family. You know, in stateside or in Europe or something, and you know, but you wouldn't like permanently set up shop in any of these countries. You would visit them for a few months while working.
Yeah.
And then you would go back to, you know, wherever your shop, your main base is, kind of thing. Yeah. You know, so maybe you know, do an apartment for 6 months in Europe. Then you spend a few months in Dubai. Then you go back to the States for a year. You know, that's, I don't know.
And it's very attractive having like a long-term working vacation, basically. You know, go do your office work, go hang out in the sun, you know, soak up some rays, whatever.
Get but robbed by the locals.
Just...
I mean, look, this kind of thing sounds really great. The problem is you're going to need to be a very disciplined person because at the end of the day, this will run out after 5 years. You have to move back to your country of origin or to another country. Make sure you've got some money.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, put some money away. It's going to be really tempting just to do all the touristy things constantly and have no money left. As we were saying, you may be making 120 grand a year, but if you're spending 100 of it, you're not making shit.
Absolutely.
Next story is from Tech Radar. Windows 11 update accidentally brings the OS to older machines. So the first major update to Windows 11, allegedly called Sun Valley 2, is reportedly ready for release. Some last-minute testing appears to have raised questions about Microsoft's strict hardware requirements to run the operating system. It was accidentally released to almost every member of the Windows Insider program with the preview release, including those running on unsupported devices. As reported by Windows Latest, Microsoft published Windows 11 22.h2 in the release preview channel on June the 7th, which included features such as drag and drop, a better start menu, a new task manager, and Mica for Win32 apps. Some users on Reddit quickly noticed that they also received updates on systems that didn't officially support the OS due to TPM requirements or use of older processors. Something to note is that other users in the same Reddit thread also confirmed that despite being in the Insider program, their own unsupported machines did not receive the update. So it didn't hit everything. Regardless, the update has been removed entirely, and Microsoft has come forward with a statement claiming there are no plans to change current hardware requirements for Windows 11. It's a bug, and the right team is investigating it, Microsoft noted. The requirements have not changed. Again, this is just proving that a lot of these requirements for Windows 11 are artificial.
Yeah.
So. And then finally, Finally, this one is just hilarious. This is from Vice.com. AI trained on 4chan becomes a hate speech machine.
Bring back Tay.
AI researcher and YouTuber Yannick Kilcher trained an AI using 3.3 million threads from 4chan's infamously toxic, politically incorrect poll board. He then unleashed the bot back on 4chan with predictable results. The AI was just as vile as the posts it was trained on, spouting racial slurs and engaging with anti-Semitic threads. After Kitcher posted a video and a copy of the program to Hugging Face, a kind of GitHub for AI, ethicists and researchers from the AI field expressed concern. That, I mean, just that line right there. Ethicists were concerned. the bot, which Kitchler called GPT-4chan, quote, the most horrible model on the internet, unquote, a reference to GPT-3, a language model developed by OpenAI that uses deep learning to produce text, was shockingly effective and replicated the tone and feel of 4chan posts. Quote, the model was good in a terrible sense, unquote, Kitchler said in a video about the project. Quote, it perfectly encapsulated the mix of offensiveness, nihilism, trolling, and deep distrust of any information whatsoever that permeates most of poll. According to Kitchler's video, he activated 9 instances of the bot and allowed them to post for 24 hours on poll. In that time, the bots posted around 15,000 times. This was more than 10% of all the posts made on the politically incorrect board that day, Kitchler said in a video about the project. AI researchers viewed Kitchler's video as more than just a YouTube prank. For them, it was an unethical experiment using AI. Quote, this experiment would never pass human research ethics board, unquote, Lauren Ogden Rader, the director of medical imaging research at Royal Adelaide Hospital and senior research fellow at the Australian Institute for Machine Learning, said in a Twitter thread. Open science and software are wonderful principles, but must be balanced against potential harm, she said. Medical research has strong ethics, blah, 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 blah.
Basically, they're just jealous.
They're
they didn't
basically
pick the fucking
pissed
deal.
That he trained it with 4chan.
Yes. Who got hurt? No one.
I mean,
my question is, did anybody
notice? Yeah.
Yeah, did anybody notice?
Yeah, they
and
did.
If they didn't, oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay.
There were multiple threads daily with, you know, this is not a bot thread. And apparently the way they did the picture that they posted with it was like, AI cannot read this or something like that. So, yeah,
okay.
People were noticing there was some shit going down, and they're sure it was bots, but there's a million bots on Chan.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, here we go. Oz Keyes, an Ada Lovelace fellow and PhD candidate at the University of Washington, told Motherboard that Kitchler's comments missed the point. Quote, this is a good opportunity to discuss not the harm, but the fact that this harm is so obviously foreseeable and that his response of show me where it has done harm misses the point and is inadequate, they said. Quote, if I spend my grandmother's estate on gas station cards and throw them over the wall into a prison, we shouldn't have to wait until the first parolee starts setting fires to agree that this was a phenomenally dunderheaded thing to do. Quote, unquote.
That is a far-fetched analogy.
Uh-huh. Quote.
That's really out there.
But, and it's a big but, that's kind of the point. Keyes said, this is a vapid project from which nothing good could come, and that's kind of inevitable. His whole shtick is nerd stock schlock. Okay. That's a balancing act to be struck between raising awareness directed at problems and giving attention to somebody whose only apparent model for mattering in the world is pay attention to me. Kitchler has said repeatedly that he knows the bot is vile. Quote, I'm obviously aware that the model isn't going to fare well in a professional setting or at most people's dinner tables, unquote, he said. It uses swear words, strong insults, and has conspiratorial opinions and all kinds of unpleasant properties. After all,
I want to have a beer with this bot. Anybody else?
Kinda. After all, it's trained on poll and it reflects the common tone and topics of the board. He said that he feels he's made that clear, but he wanted his results to be reproducible, and that's why he's posted the model to Hugging Face. Quote, as far as the evaluation results go, some of them were really interesting and unexpected and exposed weaknesses in the current benchmarks, which would not have been possible without actually doing the work. So I'm going to stop with here because, again, it's a back and forth about the ethics of doing this. First and foremost, every single one of the people bitching about this are assuming that there is nothing of value in poll. largely agree, but I know there is a few nuggets of information that are somewhat valuable on there every once in a while. It's pretty rare. Usually somebody has to point it out to you, but it is amusing. But two, this guy wasted nothing but his own time. I guess I don't understand.
Didn't hurt anyone.
Why people are so upset that he wrote this bot, although he open sourced it, so I guess it would be easy enough to take the bot and throw it at other systems.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like you could probably bias your bot in certain ways to push certain viewpoints or political figures or whatever. And I mean, that may not work super well on 4chan, but it could work very well work in other places.
Yeah. Do you
really think people come to 4chan poll to have their minds changed?
No.
They don't go to it for that reason, but it still happens.
You're going to be pretty fucking weak-minded.
Well, I'm just going to read this. This is not the last article. This is the last thing I'm going to read out of the article, but it's not the end of it. It's Kitchener didn't believe GPT-4chan could be deployed at scale for targeted hate campaigns. Quote, "It's actually quite hard to make it say something targeted," he said. "Usually it will misbehave in odd ways and is very unsuitable for running targeted anything. Again, vague hypothetical accusations are thrown around without any actual instances or evidence," which I
agree with.
I was
going to say, it would be almost schizoidal. In its thinking.
Well, I mean,
just
the best
wait for like GPT-6,
yeah,
or whatever.
I think it would make a fantastic noise machine. If you needed to generate a lot of random noise, of just bullshit posts, weird stuff, you know, I think it would be a good test for that.
Looking to boost their numbers, like I don't know, Twitter.
You know, there you go.
Just throwing that out there.
So it has its uses, but at the same time, the software's open source. Did you really think somebody wasn't going to train it on a 4chan archive at some point?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I just think. They're jealous. They didn't think of doing it.
And odds are he's probably not even the first person who's trained it on 4chan stuff.
I mean, those 4chan archives are all over the place. So it's just a huge data set to grab and feed to an AI. I mean, that's kind of how you do these things, is you build your model, you feed it data. So,
thus came the beginning of the end of the human race.
I think that started a while ago. Didn't need the internet for that.
I need to get the.
But it's not helping.
I need to get the Terminator dun 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 on the soundboard, because you know, we keep making that reference.
Things started going downhill the second we discovered fire.
Oh no, it was way before that.
True.
Oh, I think it was a Douglas Adams quote. You know, it was a God created the universe, and everyone agreed this was a generally bad decision and made a lot of people angry, or whatever the quote. I got it. That quote's way wrong. Upset a lot of people and made people, or whatever it was. So, anyways, what I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is a piece of software called EndBasic. Now, it's not quite what I thought it was at first, but it's pretty interesting. It's a basic interpreter and a portion of a DOS environment that you can run on things like a Raspberry Pi, and it's also got a web interface, so you can actually write basic programs. It's a more modern dialect of BASIC, because both Suave and I were playing with it, and I was trying to do the whole, you know, 10, print, farts, 20, go to 10, and it doesn't support line numbers, and it doesn't support go-to. So it's like, no, you have to do straight, structured, linear programming with the thing. But it can also control GPIO pins on a Raspberry Pi. But it's interesting, and as an experimentation platform, or just, you know, a demonstration platform to, like, let kids play with, probably be good for. But kind of reminds me of like the old DOS MS Basic days. So I thought it was interesting, worth linking for Dojo.
Yeah.
So, so something to play with. Anyways, so of course that's all I have for you tonight. Of course, listen to the stream we're always working on, peer decking every Thursday, Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit in the IRC tonight. We had myself, Cykros, and Cyberlard. Are you closing thoughts?
It's amazing how much fun you can have with so little amount of stuff.
Suave.
I've had a fun 3 days building shit.
Sorry, too busy packing my bags. I'm on my way to Bali.
I'll notify the locals you're coming.
Gonna say suave closing thoughts. I think that was it.
Yeah.
All right. Bang on an hour. Perfect. All right, guys. I'm gonna play sound effects and close us out.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Attention, attention. There is no cause for alarm.
Shut up, Wesley.